that had been wounded through our long baby wait. It was as if God went out of his way to show me, "See, Elizabeth, all those prayers you thought I was ignoring? I was just waiting for my big reveal. You're a writer, so I gave you a story. Now get out there and tell it." And that leads me to something we have to talk about. What will you do if God says yes? Will you think, "Finally, I am glad that's over," and move on with your life? As you enjoy the gift, will you remember the giver? When we get yeses from God, like the leper Jesus healed, one of 10 blessed men, let us remember to come stumbling back, to fall on our knees, thanking God. Luke chapter 17, verses 11 through 19. Let us not keep our stories to ourselves, but share our gratitude with anyone who will listen. Let us turn back, time and again, to praise and to thank the Lord. Let us shout the psalmist's words of celebration in Psalm 66. "Come and hear, all you who fear God. Let me tell you what he has done for me. God has surely listened and has heard my prayer. Praise be to God who has not rejected my prayer or withheld his love from me." Psalm 66, verses 16 and 19 through 20. I tell anyone who will listen the story of my Cassidy's miracle birth. I can't keep it to myself. Cassidy's birth, Cassidy's life, remind me of the faithfulness of God, his attention to detail, his wondrous sense of humor. Cassidy is my Isaac. Her story makes me weep with joy and laugh with God. When God says, "Wait some more." Right now, I am waiting on half a dozen major life things. Things Kevin and I have spent years praying about, daring to dream, working toward. I wait for the day my children, my four precious miracles, give their lives to God. Daily I pray that God helps us help him shape their faith, win their hearts. I pray for the people they marry, that even now God protects and shapes my future kids-in-law. I have two novels sitting on my computer's hard drive, waiting to find a home with publishers. They are the best work I can offer, my heart and soul in story form. I have devoted at least 4 years to each one, thousands of hours of life, and I'm still tweaking, still revising, still waiting, still wondering if I will ever get to publish mainstream novels for tweens and teens the way I have wanted to for 13 years. Time and again, I have joked with God. "You know, God, I realize that to you, 1,000 years are like a day and all, but to me, 13 years is a stinking long time." I'm sorry for shouting. I'm just saying. And that's not all. In my garage, I have a rug, a hand-sewn rug from India, special ordered to coordinate with our couches, pillows, and curtains. When we ordered it, it was a rare splurge, a gift from my husband. I have only seen the rug twice for 5 minutes. Now it stands rolled up in a dusty corner of my garage, still in its original packaging. It has stood there 4 years. 6 years ago, we moved into our dream home, a home we never could have afforded in normal times. The housing market had crashed, the house went into foreclosure, and we ended up as the shocked and unlikely beneficiaries of a market gone wrong. Pinching ourselves, feeling spoiled rotten by God, we moved in with our three littles. Our very first night in the new house, our son broke it in by vomiting on the carpet. At the time, we joked it was a good omen, a sign this was truly home. For the first time in years, maybe ever, I let my heart relax and feel safe. We were settled, We were never leaving this place, these people. For the first time in my life, I could call a city my permanent home. Stop living with the shadow of fear clouding my life, the fear that we might move at any given moment. The house had been neglected and abused, so we set about renovating and repairing. For months, we lived in dust and disorder, but since Kevin and I are putterers and tinkerers, we loved the whole process. We bought couches and ordered the rug the next January. Delivery was promised within 4 to 6 months. In the meantime, now that we had finally found the house we planned to grow old and die in, we started praying and trying for a fourth child. We who never thought we'd have even one. My parents moved into our basement during a time of transition in their careers, and we spent every night discussing their options. After several months, I finally got pregnant and was happily throwing up in every trash can I could find. I hadn't forgotten the anguish of infertility, so I treasured the misery. Besides, everyone said intense nausea was a sign of a strong pregnancy, something to be grateful for. The rug still hadn't arrived, but we were too busy throwing up, getting settled, and chasing three littles around to even notice. And in a matter of 3 weeks, the life we had known fell to pieces. After a chaotic 9-month roller coaster ride of crazy options, my parents announced their decision to move far, far away. A few days later, my husband told me his employer could no longer afford his salary, and we would also have to move. Leave family, friends, home, everything. In 3 weeks, all of us would be moving out of our house all at the same time. Moving week arrived, as did the date of our first ultrasound. As I lay there on the table fighting the constant nausea, scanning the room for a trash can, the chatty ultrasound tech got quiet. Too quiet, too long. I reached for Kevin's hand. My eyes frantically combed the fuzzy black and white screen, searching for the happy flicker of a healthy heartbeat. There was the precious little peanut shape. There the head. There the two tiny nubs that would grow into arms. There a tiny spot, the baby's heart. But the heart lay still. It did not beat. There are no words for such grief. I spent the next days in a fog of despair, bleeding out hope on a blanket on one of our new couches, watching as my parents moved out of my house and friends quietly packed our life into boxes because I couldn't do it myself. Still bleeding, still dying, we moved. We stuck a for rent sign in the front yard of our dream house and left. My parents drove in one direction, we in another. The rug had still not arrived. We spent 11 months living in between, temporary house, temporary job, preparing to move to a different city within the year to plant a new church. In the 10th month, the doorbell rang. The mailman stood on the doorstep, balancing a 10-foot-tall, rolled-up package against his shoulder. A handcrafted rug for a house we no longer lived in, for a life we no longer led. I couldn't even open it. That rug felt like a cruel taunt, a reminder of what might have been. All we had planned, all we had lost. We tucked it in a corner of the garage. A few months later, we moved again, taking the still unopened rug with us to our next rental house. There would be no place for it in our small carpeted living room, so the rug stayed in its wrapping in a corner of the garage. After 2 years, Kevin opened the rug without me knowing, unwrapped it, unfurled it, laid it out on the driveway in all its glory, called me out to see. It was even more beautiful than I'd remembered. He took pictures wanting to put it up for sale online. I refused. He looked at me like I was nuts. This rug had sat unopened in our garage for 2 years. We were still trying to claw our way out of debt incurred from the unexpected moves and medical expenses needing every dollar we could scrape together, and I still wanted to keep the rug? I couldn't explain why, but I couldn't do it. Couldn't let go. Kevin thought I was crazy, but he, having great respect for my crazy after all these years, humored me for another year. He unwrapped it again the next summer. My answer was still no. Another year passed, a rich year, all kindergarten and potty training and new friends. And now here we are, present tense. Last week I was out in our garage searching for a lost toy when I brushed up against the rug again, still rolled up, still in its original packaging. For the first time in 4 years, when I saw it, it didn't fill me with pain, didn't feel like a reminder of the place we'd lost, the people we miss, the lives that might have been. Now, that rug feels like a promise of things still to come, a future that isn't here yet, but that I can almost see winking at us just around the bend. The promise of finally feeling settled after a long season of wandering. The hope of one day owning our own home again. Doing the things people do when they're settled. Hanging pictures, building swing sets, planting perennials. I'm still waiting to unwrap that rug a third and final time. Sometimes I talk to God about it, reminding him that we have a dream in our hearts left unfulfilled. He once gave us the gift of a home we loved, a sense of security and permanence, but the permanence turned out to be mere mirage, and we did not stay long enough to enjoy it. For the past 5 years, we have found peace and contentment in borrowed houses, our tents. We have raised kids, healed from loss, had a fourth, really a fifth, baby. We have loved hard and laughed long. We have been happy, but we haven't been home. I ask God, if he's willing, to give us a home of our own again someday soon. It doesn't have to be big or fancy or the house of our dreams, just a house of our own with room for a rug. Still waiting? God gets it. What will your story be? I pray that you keep praying. Keep resisting the pitfalls. Keep clinging to faith and to friends. Keep choosing joy on your journey, wherever it leads. I love these lines from Hebrews chapter 11, the famous passage celebrating men and women of faith. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Verse 13. Abraham and Sarah never left their tents, never found their forever home. They died as tent dwellers. After Sarah's death, their son Isaac brought his bride Rebekah home to live in his mother's tent, not her house, her tent. That wait, the wait for stability, a permanent home, never ended. But Abraham and Sarah's wait for a child did. Oh, how it did. In old age, they had a son of promise, a son who made them laugh, a son who birthed a nation. When God made a promise to Abraham, since he had no one greater to swear by, he swore by himself, "I will indeed bless you, and I will greatly multiply you." And so, after waiting patiently, Abraham obtained the promise. Hebrews chapter 6, verses 13 through 15, Holman Christian Standard Bible. I don't know how your wait ends or when, but this I know, this we have seen. God sees, God hears, God cares. God feels our pain when the wait stretches long. He gets it. God sent Jesus to earth and through his son experienced life as we live it. All we feel, how we hurt. Now Jesus, our brother, sits in heaven advocating on our behalf. 1 John chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. And he does more than just intercede when we sin. Hebrews tells us he empathizes with us when we are tempted. Now that we know what we have, Jesus, this great high priest with ready access to God, let's not let it slip through our fingers. We don't have a priest who is out of touch with our reality. He's been through weakness and testing, experienced it all but the sin. So let's walk right up to him and get what he is so ready to give. Take the mercy. Accept the help. Chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, the Message Bible. I picture Jesus leaning in and whispering to God. You see what a tough time she's having while she waits? I remember what that felt like. She's going to need some extra encouragement and Holy Spirit power to get her through this. During a painful time in Israel's history, as they languished in exile, God called on his people to wait for him, offered hope for a future yet unseen. These passages transcend time and circumstance to reveal God's heart of affection and compassion for his people. He preserved these words so that you and I might also draw comfort, knowing that he hurts when we hurt. He rejoices when we rejoice. Therefore, wait for me. This is the Lord's declaration, until the day I rise up. On that day it will be said to Jerusalem, do not fear. Zion, do not let your hands grow weak. Yahweh your God is among you, a warrior who saves. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will bring you quietness with his love. He will delight in you with shouts of joy. Zephaniah chapter 3, verses 8 and 16 through 17, Holman Christian Standard Bible. Wait for me. Wait for the warrior who saves, my friend. Don't give up on God. Don't give up too soon. Be proactive, be persistent, but don't take matters into your own hands in sinful ways. Wait for me. Do your part, all you can do, but then let God do his. In his own time, in his own way, God will answer. One day, he will bring quiet after all your turmoil. Even now, he delights in you with shouts of joy. Wait for me. God sees. God hears. God cares. At journey's end, I pray you look back and say, I am better because of the wait. Better. Stronger. Closer. Humbler. More prayerful. More faithful. More confident. More compassionate. More selfless. More grateful. At journey's end, I pray you lift hands to heaven, tears in your eyes, and praise in your heart, and say, it was worth the wait. Waiting Room Reading. For further study, you can read New Testament reflections on Abraham, Sarah, and others in Hebrews chapter 11. For more on how our earthly life is but a temporary home, a tent, read 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Journal prompt. What changes is waiting accomplishing even now in your heart? How might you be different at the end of this season in your life? More pleasing to God, more like his son, no matter the final outcome of your prayer. If God says no, can you imagine your life differently? If God says yes, How will you come back to praise him? Prayer prompt. Lord, hear my prayer. Let my cry for help come before you. Do not hide your face from me in my day of trouble. Listen closely to me. Answer me quickly when I call. For my days vanish like smoke, and my bones burn like a furnace. My heart is afflicted, withered like grass. I even forget to eat my food. But you, Lord, are enthroned forever. Your fame endures to all generations. You will rise up and have compassion on Zion, for it is time to show favor to her. The appointed time has come. Psalm 102, verses 1 through 4 and 12 and 13, Holman Christian Standard Bible.
Thank you for listening to this recording of When God Says Wait, written and read by Elizabeth Lang Thompson, with select sections narrated by Sarah Zimmerman. This audio recording was produced in 2018 by Christian Audio, which owns a copyright. No portion of this recording may be reproduced for any reason without prior written consent from Christian Audio. This edition is issued by contractual arrangement with Shiloh Run Press, an imprint of Barber Publishing, originally published in English as When God Says Wait. Copyright 2017 by Elizabeth Lang Thompson, all rights reserved. Please visit christianaudio.com, facebook.com/christianaudio, or twitter.com/christianaudio to offer your impressions of this work and to explore additional titles.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.